Okay, so that's my first goal, just to keep you guys awake after your full bellies, huh?
Yes.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. I can remember about 22 years ago when I started my dietetic internship here, I walked into the heart cath lab, and the U-shaped counter there was covered literally with Krispy Kreme donuts. And I was like, are you kidding me? What's going on here? And I'm just really excited to say that now that I'm working over at the rehab facility, I think times have changed in a very good way. We have the drug reps come in and bring us lunches, and they are absolutely expected to bring heart healthy lunches. And you know, one of my messages today is we have to practice what we preach so that our patients believe in what we're telling them. So I hope that's something you'll take away from what I'm going to share today. My experience too, just so you know a little bit more about my background, I've worked in corporate wellness, I've done lectures and education and so forth over the years, but most recently in the last 12 years, I've been working heavily with our cancer rehab program, cardiac and pulmonary rehab as well. And just show of hands, like, I mean, it's not very often in my experience that I have a patient that just has one diagnosis to deal with. You know, and so when I moved from working just with cancer patients who had the plethora of diabetes and heart risk factors and pulmonary issues too, I moved from downstairs where we just did cancer rehab to our upstairs facility with cardiac and pulmonary being the main focus. And I met patients there in cardiac and pulmonary that also had a history of cancer. So have y'all seen that too? It overlaps a lot. So one of my take-home points for you as well is our message is good for everybody and for disease prevention across the board, right? So why is it important for our patients? If we are eating well, getting adequate nutrition, getting the right number of calories from the right stuff, like if somebody needs 1,800 calories, there's a big difference between 1,800 calories of Snickers bars versus 1,800 calories of good stuff, right? And everybody knows that. But when you can convince your patients to eat well, they're gonna respond better to whatever treatment they're under. They're going to function better. They're gonna have better quality of life. We're gonna be doing something to reduce their risk of a setback in treatment or being hospitalized. I see that a lot with my cancer patients with dehydration, for example. We're just talking about water intake. You know, it can be really, really simple, but makes a huge impact on their quality of life and their journey through their treatment. Sorry. So one of my messages, one of our big components of our rehab program across the street is education. And when we teach the Mediterranean nutrition class, it's a 2-hour class. And some people, I think, when they hear that as the expectation to attend, they're like, oh my God, how can we talk about anything like that for 2 hours? That class for me blows by so fast. And we have patients who actually want to come and hear it again, you know, and I think they need to hear it from all of us, you know, every day, because we've been eating since the day we were born, you know, so who are we at this point in their life to come in and say, hey, you got to change it all up, got to do it different. And as humans, we're creatures of habit, right? So it takes us a while to change something. So I really like emphasizing and working with our patients on lifestyle change and doing it in baby steps too. So why do we need dietitians? Because there are so many diets out there, right? There are so many eating plans. There's so much on the internet. There are so many opportunities for our patients to kind of seek out, what do I need to do to change? Or how do I need to lose weight? What can I, you know, avoid, minimize, restrict myself from? But there is a vicious cycle to dieting. There's a start date, there's an end date, and there's no follow-up typically. So you start the diet, you have your restrictions, maybe you meet some weight loss goals, you start feeling great about yourself and what you've achieved, and then all that deprivation kind of hits you in the face. Maybe you go back to your old ways, you haven't made a lifestyle change. You just followed the diet for a certain amount of time. And then once you get away from that plan that was too restrictive to be sustainable, you're back to old habits, right? Typically, we see those patients gain that weight back, their risk factors return, they don't have as good control of diabetes or blood sugars, you know, and so forth. So it's a vicious cycle, and it's up to us to keep talking to them on a regular basis to say, hey, this is something you have control of. I'll speak about my cancer patients for a minute. If you've known anybody or you yourself have gone through that journey, I think when you hear that diagnosis or any, you know, if you have a heart attack, nobody's expecting that to happen. Whatever the case is, all of a sudden that patient, that person feels out of control. And I like to tell my patients that there are two things in this life that you really do have complete control of, and that's what you put in your mouth and how you move your body. And those two things are very, very powerful in terms of how you feel and how you respond and how you recover and move about life. So we can really make a huge impact on them. And it's not rocket science. So my talk, kind of like what Taylor said, it's not that formal, you know, I'm just talking some food here. But it has a huge emphasis on how that patient or how that person lives day to day. And I mean, this might sound cheesy, but I can really love going to bed at night, feeling like or reflecting on my day, and a patient has said, "You changed my life. You made this work for me. I get it now." Or, "Wow, I just feel better." It's really kind of neat to have that impact on somebody's life. So the Mediterranean diet, which I really like to get away from that word. I really always thought of diet as a nasty four-letter word. I like to really emphasize lifestyle. It's a change. It's a commitment forever. And the Mediterranean lifestyle is truly what every discipline recommends for being healthy and reducing your risk of disease, whether that be heart disease, pulmonary disease, or cancer. Obesity in the last few years has been recognized also as a disease. And obesity, as you probably all know, raised the risk of all those disease factors as well. So following those principles of eating a more plant-based diet, healthy lean proteins, healthy fats, low-fat dairy, and also we're going to talk about minimizing sugar is important. So how do we make this important to our patients? A long time ago, I would say probably 25 years ago, when I was talking to a dietitian, I was interested in the field, but I wanted to see why I would like to do this. One of the things that this lady told me that has stuck with me is this quote up here: "They don't care what you know until they know that you care." And when you're talking about how somebody eats, that's really personal. And people aren't easy to change with that. So I think that in working in rehab, we have such a privileged way to work with our patients. You get to see them 3 times a week, hopefully at least. You're building relationships. It's not just a quick hospital stay and then you're discharged and you don't see them again. But we have an opportunity to build a relationship and truly make a difference in their life. So when I'm on the floor, I tell them who I am. I let them know what I'm there for, but I don't always jump in on them on what they eat day one, you know, because I want them to talk to me again. I don't want to just be labeled right away as the food police. So why should they listen to us? We absolutely need to practice what we preach. You know, it's a lot easier when I can get up and say, "Hey, I was on my elliptical this morning for an hour. I'm working on this too. From an exercise perspective, even though that's not my discipline per se." But then I can also talk to them about how, you know, just because I'm a dietitian doesn't mean I've always been thin. Weight has always been a challenge for me, to be quite personal with you. And it's not easy always to maintain and achieve that healthy ideal weight, but it's something that I can relate to, I think we can all kind of clue in on parts of our life or times that we've worked on a goal and setting a goal and an objective and how we had to make changes to reach that goal. So I want you to think about how you can kind of talk to your patients drawing from your own experience. To say, "Oh, I know, it's really hard." I'll pick on Hannah. We just talked about how we both kind of missed breakfast this morning. You know, we're rushing around, doing our thing, getting ready for the day or whatever. But wow, you can take that and share that with somebody and say, "Hey, I know how it feels to miss a meal. You know, it doesn't do me any good. I wasn't, you know, paying attention as well. I kind of felt a little low in energy. And, you know, did you know it's really important to eat every 4 hours throughout your day?" How many patients come into rehab and they've skipped a meal? I have stopped patients from working out because they didn't eat right when they came in. Patients will get to where they look like they're gonna pass out. We check their blood sugar and we find out they haven't eaten in 8 hours. Or maybe when they, like right before they came in, they said, "Well, I drank some water." Okay, that's great hydration, but you need some protein, and that we check their blood sugar, and it's like a patient about a week ago, their blood sugar was down to like 72. So she's not even diabetic. But I was able to talk to her and say, hey, you need some protein. You need to eat some good healthy carbs before you come in. We had this great conversation. The next week when she came in, she said, you really changed my life. I am so focused now on protein, and it makes such a difference. And it's simple. Like I said, it's not rocket science. So we've got to convince them that we care by showing them we care about ourselves, we care about them, and it's worthwhile, right? So Hannah said that in a lot of these meetings, y'all don't have dietitians a lot of times, right? So we wanted to bring some of this information to y'all. And I feel like I'm kind of preaching to the choir. Like I said, when I teach this class to our patients, it's a 2-hour class. And first Hannah just gave me 45 minutes and I was excited to get an hour. But I'm just gonna kind of pop through some of these highlighted points that we go through in the Mediterranean diet so that hopefully you'll say, okay, yeah, I got that, or oh, I can emphasize that with my patients, and maybe it'll bring up some discussions. But have y'all seen this picture of my plate? Okay, so this is what has replaced the old food guide pyramid, the four food groups, and all that. So I emphasize with them, half of what you eat should be plant-based. That's easy for everybody to see, the fruits and vegetables. And then I say, but do you realize grains are also plants? Like, those are plant-based foods. So really, 75% of what we eat should be plant-based. And that's like the number one key factor of the Mediterranean American food plan or lifestyle, is eat more plant-based foods. Then you've got a fourth of your plate coming from lean protein. Well, when you went out to eat last, what was the main focal point on the plate? It was what?
Meat.
It was the meat. It was the protein. It's the 12-ounce steak, right? That's the focus point. So I take this opportunity to say, I want, when you're thinking about meal planning, to emphasize what are my plant-based foods and what protein is going to complement that. Just reverse the way you think about it. And then we've got what on the side? What's the circle?
Dairy.
Dairy. How many of you as adults drink milk? A couple hands gone up. That's awesome. I'm so excited. More than a couple hands actually went up. Not like this, but like this. But, you know, as teenagers, a lot of people start dropping the milk. We replaced it with soda or sweet tea or some kind of juice or other sugary sweetened beverage. We've got to bring dairy back. As we age, we're at risk for what?
Osteoporosis.
Our patients take quite a hit with that too, especially if they're not active, right? Different treatments, especially I know my cancer patients go through a lot that really impact our bone density. So bringing back some good quality dairy to increase their calcium, it makes a difference. Okay, so grains. Whole grains, right? Whole wheat bread, whole grain cereal. This is an emphasis. So this is that orange component of the plate. The grains are starch foods. I need you to help me send the message that this is the one food group that most people overconsume so quickly, so easily. I am grateful to whoever fed me today. I appreciate it. It was wonderful. But the sandwich I had, just to give you an example, that turkey Sierra sandwich was the one I had. It's delicious. That bread was probably 4 servings of starch. So when you think of a sandwich, most people think each slice is 1 serving. But a lot of our sandwiches, because over the years, our serving sizes have grown, right? So now a lot of times those bread servings that we thought were 2 are actually 4. A typical size bagel, for example, like at Brugger's or Bagel Ben, or do you know what I'm talking about? A fourth of that bagel is considered 1 starch serving. It's only about 80 calories worth to get a serving. I often reference my bowl of Cheerios when I'm teaching this class. Then I'll say, think about how much cereal you pour into your cereal bowl. Do you ever stop to measure it? You know, that's something you can ask your patients. Are you measuring your food? Do you just eyeball it? One bowl of cereal, just because you're eating out of one bowl, doesn't mean it's 1 serving. I have a bowl that literally will hold 3 servings of Cheerios. You know, so if I eat 3 servings, I've got to count it. And if all day long I thought I was just getting 1 serving when I was actually getting 3, that's the difference in thinking I was eating 1,000 calories when it adds up to 3,000 calories. That's a huge difference when it comes to those numbers on the scale. Does that make sense? Those are simple things that you can tell your patients. If you challenge them, just say, hey, just for this week, I challenge you to pull out your measuring scoops, measure out that rice. See what a half a cup looks like on your plate. They'll be surprised. My husband laughed one night when I literally served him a single serving of pasta in the middle of his dinner plate with a single serving of sauce. He said, what is that? I said, that's your single serving. He has about five or six. So I really took me, you know, showing him what the difference is. You just got all your starches in one meal. So if you do that with your pasta spaghetti dinner, and that's just one meal, you can see how easy it is to eat twice as much from this food group. One of the things that we like to show are food labels in the class, because patients need to realize what is a serving size. They're on the boxes, and I always tell patients, you've got to compare that to what you put in your mouth. It's so important. It's easy to do. You just have to think about it. The other thing I like to point out is, see on the fiber one, the ingredients, the first word is what?
Whole.
Can y'all see that?
Whole.
It's whole, right? So that's the key thing. If you know you're getting a whole grain, then you've got to tell me that first word on there is whole. Some of the bread products now, I'll show you one in a second. We'll go forward. If you can see the package of bread, The words above the word white say whole grain. And a lot of people are gravitating towards this food product because it looks like it's white bread, but really a whole grain. And actually it's not. And there's tiny print above whole grain that says made with. So it's in there, but it's not the first ingredient. The first ingredient is enriched. If it says enriched or refined, you are not eating a whole grain. Let me show you what a true whole grain is. At this point in the class, I tell patients to think about a kernel of corn. And if you were popping corn to make popcorn, you're eating a whole grain because you're eating all three components. The outer husk is the bran. That's where all the B vitamins, the fiber, and a lot of the antioxidants sit. And then the center core, or the oil sac, is the germ. That's where a lot of healthy omega-3 fatty acids are and good antioxidants. And then the white component, which is like the middle core of the whole thing, is the endosperm. Well, when you have a whole grain, whether it be from wheat, barley, oats, rye, doesn't matter the grain, they're using all three of these components. When we have a white bread product, an enriched or refined cracker or bread or cereal, they stripped off the bran, the outer husk, and they took out the center core. They took out all the good stuff. And they left us with the endosperm, which is mostly starch and a tiny little bit of protein. It's really not enough to write home about. So when you're talking about whole grains, you've got to emphasize this with your patients. Just tell them, why is it important? Okay, vegetables. Darker in color, that's what you want to go for. The darker your vegetables and your fruits are, the more nutrient dense they are. So that's why there's an emphasis on dark green leafy vegetables. That's why spinach and romaine and green leaf lettuce is so much more important than iceberg lettuce. It has more nutrition. And so when you're talking about getting quality nutrition in with your patients, this tip is really important. Now there's an exception to every rule. So there's some white guys that are really good, like garlic, onions, ginger. Those ingredients, those plant-based foods, can really enhance the flavor of what you're cooking. They're great to saute things in, and you can emphasize using that as opposed to salt or sodium seasonings and things like that. So emphasize that, but really, really go for color. You've probably all heard that phrase, eat a rainbow every day. I can't tell you I eat the rainbow every day. I can tell you it's ideal if we eat the rainbow at least every 3 days to touch on every single color. And I emphasize with my patients, because this is usually a hard push, is try to touch every color at least once a week. Like, I know if you were at my house, you would touch on the dark greens and the oranges and the reds very frequently. But the purples, we need to work in a little bit more with that work, you know? Everybody's going to have their favorite go-tos. But emphasize this, because when you eat these strong plant-based foods that are dark and rich in color, you are providing your body with antioxidants and important vitamins and minerals that truly protect you at a cellular level against disease. Then you got the fruits. And by the way, the serving sizes are small. I'm going back to vegetables. 3 to 5 a day, a half a cup cooked or 1 cup raw is all I'm asking for one serving. If you look at that volume, it's not huge. Like, it seems so different to talk about serving sizes on the fruits and vegetables and get people to think they can do it. And yet, it's easy for them to consume 12 servings a day of grains. Like, just think about it. Okay, so 2 to 4 fruits a day, and we do mean whole fruit, not the juice. If you think about, here's my tea glass, but if that were my juice glass in the morning and I filled it with orange juice, which you probably know people who do this, how many oranges would it take to fill this cup? How many? Just guess. 10, 12 at least, right? But how many of you would sit down and eat 10 to 12 oranges at one time? Nobody. Nobody should, right? It's too much concentration. So even though it might be completely 100% juice, it is way too much concentrated sugar for any of us. It's about as good, in my opinion, as a can of soda. So we emphasize whole fruit instead of juice. You want to limit your intake of high sugar fruits if you're diabetic. Some diabetics are just really sensitive to these fruits. It doesn't mean they can't have them ever, but be mindful that those are more concentrated in sugar. Nuts and seeds. These are a great component of a healthy diet, and I am talking about the unsalted, dry roasted, not honey roasted, and sugar-coated varieties. But walnuts and pecans especially are super rich in omega-3 fatty acid. That's a very protective component of our foods that reduces our risk of disease and reduces inflammation that fosters disease. And a fourth of a cup, can y'all just picture that amount, that scoop in your kitchen? It's about what I could just put kind of in my fingertips, really. A fourth of a cup gives you 170 to 200 calories. That's a significant amount of energy, a good component of a snack. How many of you can relate, though, to opening up the can of nuts and diving in with a handful and then going back for another handful? It is easy to do, and patients can connect with that, you know? I mean, it's easy to just start to realize I'm scraping the bottom of the nut can and wow, how many hundreds or over 1,200 or 1,500 calories you might have consumed on this small can of nuts. When we emphasize natural nut butters, do y'all know what I'm talking about? It's a great healthy way to say peanut butter. What did you say, Kayla?
I said Crazy Richards.
Crazy Richards, yes. My friends up here know what I'm talking about. So a natural nut butter means the ingredients include the nut only, ideally, or just nuts and a little bit of salt. And that is it. I grew up on Jif peanut butter. I love the way it tastes, and I'm still trying to get it out of my parents' kitchen. I have to say that. But a lot of those commercial brand peanut butters are full of added sugars, trans fats, which are kind of in code word under the word hydrogenated oils. So if you've still got some of these peanut butters lingering around in your house, that would be an easy thing for you to change and talk to your patients about doing it yourself. Okay, healthy fats and oils. 5 to 7 servings a day is not a whole lot of teaspoons. That's a tiny amount. When you think about condiments that you add to your sandwich or salad dressing, oil that maybe you're dipping your bread in and things like that, makes a difference and adds up quickly. Every gram of carbohydrate, every gram of protein only gives us 4 calories. Every gram of a fat gives us 9. So it's much more calorie dense than our other macronutrients. So a little bit goes a long way. And of course, we've all heard there's healthy and unhealthy fats, and then there's fats we really need to stay away from. So the healthy guys are those liquids at room temperature. The unhealthy guys are saturated fats like your butters. And then the trans fats, we absolutely have to eliminate. And I don't know if y'all heard, but about 2 summers ago, the FDA agreed that trans fats were so dangerous to our health that they told the food industries, you have to take it out. You've got 3 years to clean it up. There can be no trans fats in our foods. So I'll show you this next slide. Do you see under nutrition facts, about in the middle, it says trans fat is 0 grams. You see that? If the serving size they report on has no more than a half a gram, they can claim 0 right there. But I want you to look at the highlighted words in the list of ingredients. 5 times it's listed as partially hydrogenated some kind of oil. Those are that's where they're sneaking in the trans fat. Look at the front of the label of this package. Is that not going to scream out to all of our patients, buy me? The diabetics are going to jump on it because it's low in sugar. It's got this green circle with a check mark, which that's just going to scream it's healthy for everybody, right? And then it's only 100 calories, so anybody who's trying to watch their waistline is going to say, hey, this is great for me. But someone who wants a 200 calorie snack and eats two bars of those is probably going to get a whole gram of trans fats. Do you see what I'm saying? So just educating your patients to look for that in their ingredients. Sometimes I like to send my clients home and say, I just want you to read the boxes, read the foods that you have in your kitchen now, and put a big X on it if it's high in sugar or if it has these trans fats hidden in the ingredient list. Be more aware of what you have at home. It might surprise you. Okay, so when we pick fats and oils, do so with good choices. Go for the products that are made with healthy oils like the olive oil and things like that. Now, I like to show this slide in my classes. Just think about it. If you don't pour bacon grease down your drain because you're afraid to clog it, why are you eating it? I love that. I just think that picture leaves a lasting impression on the people that we work with. So ask them if they do that with their grease after they cook, you know? And they'll say, no, I would never do that. Ask them why. Because it'll clog up my pipes. Well, what's your next question going to be? You know? Think about it. Okay, we have to be careful about, I'll call them the fats coming out of Hollywood. And I consider coconut oil one of those fats. Coconut oil is a big craze right now. Everybody's on the coconut oil bandwagon, like it's the latest and greatest thing. And here's the facts. Per tablespoon, coconut oil compared to olive oil is about the same number of calories, the exact same total grams of fat, but it has 12 out of 14 of those total grams of fat are coming from saturated fat, and only almost 2 are coming from saturated fat in olive oil. So when you look at coconut oil, it's a solid at room temperature, right? It's not something we need to be eating right now. I will tell you guys that I know studies are being done to try to show if this is healthier than what we think right now. This oil is higher in medium chain fatty acids as opposed to long chain fatty acids. It does break down quicker. That's why if you hold it in your hand, it's gonna liquefy quicker than say the same amount of butter will. So stay tuned. But for now, what we know, our cardiologists are saying no to this, and this is why. So I love coconut oil, and I tell my patients that, but I don't have it in the kitchen. It's in my bathroom, and I like to put it on my skin and on my hair, and I like how it smells, but I'm not eating it. Okay, here's the dairy circle. We need to emphasize 3 servings a day. Remind your patients that includes cheese. You know, I don't think people think about that. But cheese in small portions are good, but it's high in fat. You gotta be careful of that. And then if you've got heart failure patients, it's really high in sodium, so you've gotta be aware of that. 1 ounce is about 1 slice of a typical slice of cheese or a string cheese, that one little package of it. 1 cup of milk is what we're talking about, or 1 cup of yogurt. And when you are emphasizing the whole picture, you've got to think about sugar grams. And when yogurt comes into play, I don't know if y'all have looked at sugar in your yogurt, but there are some yogurts that have over 50 grams of sugar in that one little cup. Y'all, I see heads nodding, you know what I'm talking about. You want to find yogurts that have no more than 7 grams. That will reflect about the natural amount of sugar that's already in there from that lactose, okay, that natural milk sugar. So here's an example. We've got some Activia on the left, and it's 18 grams of sugar compared to the 000 Oikos brand that only has 6, and some of their flavor varieties have 7. But a big difference there. These on the right with the Oikos, those are not going to count towards what I tell you is your added sugar budget, but all of the ones over there, the 18, subtract 7 from that, the remainder is going to count towards your added sugar budget. I show this slide to give people the information that there are milk alternatives, that when you go from whole milk to skim milk, you are losing calories, you're losing saturated fat, you're still getting good protein, you're still getting good calcium. And by the way, if you want to try some of these milk alternatives, a lot of them are fortified with calcium and have 50% more calcium than a cup of cow's milk. So they have options to consider. When it comes to protein, the plate on top, the deck of cards compared to that breast of chicken, shows you visually what a single serving looks like for a chicken breast or any meat, any animal meat. That's about 3 ounces worth. The red meat below does not show you how much you're allowed to have from red meat, okay? One of those steaks would represent the amount of red meat we want our patients to have no more than in an entire week. So 6 ounces of red meat is really the message there. And everybody is still surprised to hear that pork is a red meat, because the media tells us it's what? It's the other white meat, but it's not. And so one of our nurses said it best, when pigs fly, pork will be red meat. And that hadn't happened yet. Okay, and then we've got meat substitutes. So peanut butters, the nuts, beans, low-fat dairy foods, eggs, tofu, tempeh, and seitan. All of those are meat alternatives that you could enjoy for protein, lean protein, that don't give you the same risk factors that certainly the red meat and a little bit of our white meat choices give in terms of saturated fat. But for the Mediterranean lifestyle, we really want to emphasize the intake of fish. And why is that? What is it rich in? The omega-3 fatty acid again. So 2 to 4 times a week, 2 is really the minimum. I always push my patients to try to incorporate it 4 times a week. It's just a better, leaner, healthier intake. And it can be easy and it can be inexpensive. It can be a can of tuna fish packed in water. Right beside the cans of tuna fish, they sell the vacuum pack bags of wild caught salmon that's boneless, skinless, and already cooked. Those go on sale at Harris Teeter for $1 a bag, and I will be seen buying 20 at a time when that goes on. I mean, you can make it cheap and inexpensive, but have healthy foods available as that protein source. Why do we say shellfish once a week? Cholesterol. Exactly. So tell that to your patients. And I always have to say, y'all know I'm not talking about fried fish here, right? You know that. Eggs got such a bad reputation when I was first working in this field. I mean, it's like if you ate one egg, you were gonna die. It was just horrible. And I'm glad to tell you that they have lightened that restriction. Egg whites are pure protein. Everybody can have as many egg whites as you want. It's a great source of protein. But for regular non-diabetics, I'll say, you should have no more than 7 yolks a week. And diabetics, because they're just at a higher risk of heart disease, not just having heart disease, but actually dying of heart disease from an event, they are recommended to have no more than 3 yolks a week. So you can tell your patients, hey, if you want a 3-egg omelet on Saturday morning, that's great. Make sure you don't have more than 4 the rest of the week, you know, if they're not diabetic. If they're diabetic, you need to have that number 3 talk. Some patients will come in and they'll say, well, I just eat 3 meals a day. I never snack. I'm really, really healthy and I'm cutting out snacks. And I said, well, why would you do that? Why is snacking bad, you know? And so healthy snacking can be a very smart way to follow a healthy diet, but it needs to be from good quality foods, not from junk foods. Okay, the added sugar budget. We used to have the hard and fast rule that nobody should have more than 40 grams of added sugar a day. That is still a very good rule of thumb, but for the person who only needs 1,200 calories a day, 40 grams is really more than what they need. It should be no more than 10% of your calories. We do not include the natural sugars though, from vegetables, from fruits, the plain yogurt that we talked about, or no more than 7 grams of sugar in a serving of yogurt, that doesn't count. And then milk sugars, they don't count because all of those are natural. It's not something we added. Now don't let your patients who are drinking chocolate milk fool you. That counts as some added sugars. But when you look at your food labels, this is another thing I usually emphasize with my patients, is go home tonight with a big red Sharpie marker, and any food that you have in your home that has more than 7 grams of sugar per serving, put a big X on that container. So that when you go to use it, you know, ooh, I better maybe use half of a serving. Or mix this with something. You know, like a lot of people think Honey Nut Cheerios are the type of Cheerios I'm talking about. No, it's really not. It has 9 grams of sugar per serving. But if you've got Honey Nut Cheerios at home, you know what you can do? You can buy a box of regular ones, mix them. You're reducing the amount of sugar load that you eat at one time. Then when you're done with that, go for the happy medium and get those multigrain Cheerios. But A teaspoon of sugar gives you 4 grams. Some people have to have that sugar in their coffee in the morning, or would rather use real sugar for whatever they want to sweeten stuff with than sweeteners, and that's fine. You have to work it into your budget. So if you've got an added sugar budget of 40, you know, 1 teaspoon of sugar or honey or maple syrup or any of those things that people want to argue are natural sugars, it still counts as something you're adding to your intake. So tell them they can work it in, but they have to measure it and they have to count it appropriately. So does this mean I can never have a dessert? No, it doesn't. I am not that mean food police that's going to take all your fun foods away, but you need to have a balance. So having it no more than once or twice a week is reasonable. Now, if doing that doesn't allow your patient to meet their weight loss goals or control blood sugars, then are they eating too much when they have it once or twice a week? Do they need to maybe consider what else could I have that's a little sweet but not really ridiculous? You know, talk to them about some ideas for better choices. Emphasize with your patients that fat-free foods are really not the way to go. Fat-free usually means I took out fat, so that doesn't taste good, so I've got to add in sugar and or salt to bring it flavor. So they're going to be getting an abundance of one of those two things that we don't want too much of too. Here's a great example of empty calories versus whole foods. Some of my patients will actually say, well, I thought I shouldn't eat nuts because they're so high in fat. Okay, well, you shouldn't eat too many nuts, but look at the nutrition you're getting from a serving of nuts. Now talk to me about your little snacky junk foods, and let's really compare what you're doing. So people will say, well, the gummy bears, they don't have as many calories, or they don't have, you know, whatever. Like, they're going to justify what they want, and it's up to us to say, well, what is that giving you that's good for you? How is that making your heart function better, or have, you know, improve your lab work, or whatever? Having nuts has nutrition. Okay, people sometimes don't realize that what they drink has a big impact on their overall health, especially when it comes to juice, if it's 100% juice, like I was talking about earlier. Or sodas. They think once in a while that's okay, but a can of soda typically has 39 grams of sugar. Wow factor is a glass of sweet tea has almost the same amount. And then it's fun to get those fancy frappalapa-ding-dong drinks now, and you know, those sugars are out the roof. So start paying attention to the menu boards at where you go. Tell your patients to do that. The calories are up there, and it may not make them stop ordering their favorite drinks or food items, but they might realize, wow, that drink is 750 calories? Yikes, you know, maybe they'll order a small instead of the medium size. It adds up quickly. So take a look at this. Each one of those squares represents a teaspoon of sugar in these beverages. Carrots, do you see that on there? I actually have patients quite frequently argue with me about carrots and fruit and say, well, those are so high in sugar, I've been told, so I really shouldn't have those, right? And I want to show them this picture so bad, because, like, how can they think, like, sugar has, one serving has, like, the equivalent of 4 grams or 1 teaspoon, but they don't think about it when they're having the sugary beverages or the candy bars. There's the juice in the top left. Hopefully these things will leave an impression. Okay, and then especially when we get to talking about holiday times and festivities, alcohol, if it doesn't play a role in your everyday life, it definitely comes up sometimes for holidays. My message to my patients usually is, make sure you have a glass of water before you have your beverage of choice, whether that be an alcoholic drink or a sweet tea or a soda that you've been avoiding. Have a full glass of water first, then have your glass of wine or whatever, and before you have a second, have another full glass of water. The pure volume intake should help to minimize your total intake of sugary beverages or alcoholic drinks. You need to emphasize what a drink is. It is 5 ounces of wine, which is slightly over a half cup. It's a 12-ounce beer, or it's 1.5 ounces of liquor. And please remind them that if they're having mixed drinks, to think about what that liquor is mixed with. Usually it's a fruit juice or a soda, right? So those extra calories and sugars come in very quickly. And you probably are aware that 1 drink a day for women and 2 drinks a day for men is the recommended safe intake. And I always want to emphasize, You cannot save all those up through the week and have a big party every Saturday night. And every, no matter what I've taught, somebody in my classes brings that up. And I try to make them think about, what are the medications you're on? Every medication we take has to be filtered through our liver. And there's a toxicity value to any of those medications, especially like my chemo patients and so forth. This is toxic, right? Alcohol is a toxin, so it's just adding more work for that organ to have to accomplish. So you don't want to overdo it, especially, you know, with that person that wants to have that party on Saturday night. Okay, sodium. Our body only needs about 500 milligrams to function. Typically, Americans have 4,000 to 6,000 milligrams a day. And if you take a look at nutrition facts for most restaurant foods, just look at fast food items one day. Just look at sodium. The sodium is ridiculous. There are some sandwiches, burgers, that are over 6,000 milligrams just by themselves, not to mention the fries you might get with it. So this is a huge push for us to make our patients aware of. When you're looking at food labels, try to find foods that have no more than 140 milligrams per serving on that label. Most of us are not getting too much sodium because we're using the salt shaker at the table. And I think that that message has been out for years and years, and people have paid attention to it. So they'll say, I don't salt my foods. Well, follow-up question, do you cook with salt? Like when you're cooking your foods, are you using salt? Oh, well, of course I do, you know? So think about that. You don't realize how much you might be consuming with what you're cooking with. Tell your patients, you can make every recipe with about a fourth the amount of salt, and you still come out with the same product that tastes good. One of the things that patients ask is, can I use canned foods? Yes, you can. It's convenient, it's easy. A lot of our patients don't have the energy to stand and cook and prepare a lot of foods in their kitchen. If they did, they wouldn't have enough energy to sit down at the table and eat it. So I try to think of how can you make it easy. So if they're using canned foods because of the sodium factor, tell them to rinse it. Rinse it four or five times. That eliminates 40 to 50% of the sodium in that canned food. Emphasize that they can buy fresh frozen produce. They can buy fresh frozen vegetables and fruit that have no added cream sauces or butter or sodium or anything. And I'm the first to admit that my family would not get as much plant-based foods if that wasn't an option, because it's just convenient and it's easy. So use those things to make your life fit. Okay, one of the things that I always like to go over, of course, you've heard me jump, you know, kind of fit it into this talk too, is teaching our patients how to read and interpret a food label. Because if you can teach them how to do that and how to look for the right numbers, they will be better shoppers, therefore better consumers, therefore healthier people. I love it when I ask people, hey, do you read food labels? Oh, yes, all the time. Well, what are you looking for? And then they don't know what to say. Oh, well, I look at the fat, I look at the sugar, whatever it is. And I say, well, what number are you looking for? And they don't know what to say. You know, they really don't know the numbers. So this is a huge education point in our program that I think is so valuable. And people come back and they will tell us on the floor, wow, what a difference. I never knew. I never realized what I was eating. I didn't realize there were other options that actually were low in sodium or lower in fat. You know, we don't really emphasize the percentages. We really focus on what are the grams you should be looking for per serving and how much are you eating. So this is just a wonderful tool for your patients to be aware of and actually use. And I always tell them, you're free to choose. You can eat whatever you want, it's up to you. I'm not feeding you. But you're not free from the consequences of your choice, right? And I just like for them to think about that. You know, a lot of our patients are gonna come in to rehab and they're gonna say, you're not gonna change me. I'm here, I'll do my exercise, I'll do it. But they are not ready to think about changing their food habits. Meet them where they are. Say, okay, I get that. You know, if you say anything else, you're gonna push them away and they're not gonna listen to you. But just try to build that relationship. Try to think about, well, gosh, what can I ask them about? So you could just think about some of these, you know? Do you know how many calories you need in a day? Do you know why it's important for you to eat a variety of foods or get those plant-based foods? Do you get 5 servings already of fruits and vegetables a day? That's not trying to change anything about what they're doing. That's just giving them some things to think about. Maybe they've never thought about it. I have a mate, sometimes I go to teach a class and I think, gosh, my information is just, it's old, it's boring, but it's because I hear it all the time. I've been studying this for years. I've been doing it, we've been doing it, you know, and we've been living it. But some of our patients have never, ever, ever thought about what gives me protein. What is sugar? Why is it not good to have too much of it? They just don't think about it like we do because they didn't go into our field. You know, we're probably all here because we care about our health, we care about helping others, but our patients aren't that same person. So asking them these thought-provoking questions hopefully will open the door, maybe not that day, but the next day or the next week. And they'll say, hey, you know what I realized? I'm not eating vegetables, or I'm not eating fruits, or I never thought about what you said the other day, and now, you know, can you help me think about this? Can I set a goal? You know, can you hold me accountable? Sometimes people just need somebody to like hang something over their head to say, all right, if I know you're going to ask me about this the next time I come in, I'm going to think about it harder, you know? So we can be that kind of cheerleader for them. There are, the next 3 slides are the dietary goals that are components of the Mediterranean lifestyle. And through the class and through our one-on-one nutrition consults and so forth, we want to ultimately try to achieve these goals with our patients. But like I said, we are, as humans, creatures of habit, and we don't change things easily overnight. So when I end our Mediterranean class, I give them this handout. And like I said, it's 3 slides worth here. And I ask them for a show of hands. I'll ask you the same thing. How many of you brush your teeth every day? Hopefully every hand goes up. I literally have taught one class where somebody didn't raise their hand. I was like, oh my gosh. But, you know, do you have to think about brushing your teeth? Do you have to write yourself a note to do it? Set a calendar appointment? No, it's just a part of your day, right? That is such a great example of what a non-negotiable part of your life is. You don't think about it, you just do it. Probably twice a day, right? So all of these dietary goals, I tell them, is your new list of toothbrushes. And you need to think about which ones are you ready to work on. I know that might sound so silly, but most people are like, oh, okay, I kind of get that. So I tell them there's a list of about, I don't know, maybe 18. I want you to pick 1 or 2 and work on it for a month. Because it takes us about 30 days to take a new habit and incorporate it into our lifestyle. Any of these dietary goals that our patients stick with are going to bring them lifelong benefits. If they stick with 9, that's amazing. We've done something to truly impact their life. It's going to make a long-lasting difference, right? If we give them this list of goals, especially if we do it at the beginning, and we say, hey, this is what you need to do, they might be like, whoa, overwhelmed. I can't do this. Or somebody's going to take it home and say, okay, I got this. Whatever you tell me to do, I'm going to do it. Boom, boom, boom. And they do it great for maybe 3 weeks. And then they hit that wall because they run out of steam. And they don't stick to any of them. And then we've lost our battle, right? So I want you to feel successful when you're working with your patients, even if they just make small or few changes, okay? Because those will stick with them and they'll be long-lasting. And that's why it's really important that you have to meet them where they are. You have to realize where they're ready to make a change. Everybody's not going to be ready to change. And that's okay too. We can't do it for them, but we can still give them the information. We can still continue to ask the questions and bring them to that. So my last message is just love yourself enough to live a healthy lifestyle. Be that example and be there for them to try to encourage. That's really all we can do.